Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. This is episode 135, and we're going to be talking about side hustles today. You might notice a different voice than what you typically hear from Travis. This is Molly, one of the newer consultants to the Student Loan Planner team, and I'm joined today by Dan, the other newer consultant. Dan, you want to say hi?
Hey, everybody. Dan Rooker here. Thanks, Molly, for hosting this.
Absolutely. So both of us happen to have side hustles. So we thought it would be kind of cool to talk about what side hustles are, you know, how they might have changed in the pandemic. You know, is it worth the extra time and focus that you have to work outside of your primary job? And what kind of impact does it have on student loans? So why don't we just dive right in? What is a side hustle? Dan, I don't know if you want to get started with that.
Sure. I'll define a side hustle. And I usually start when I'm looking for any definition. I go to Google. Google's my
trusty friend.
Yeah. So Google says that a side hustle is a job that you can work on top of your full-time job. That could be a rideshare service, food delivery, could be freelance work. And you've heard of companies around that, Uber, DoorDash, Fiverr, Upwork. It used to be that side hustle was like newspaper delivery or deck heater fencing. It was a second job. And it's not that these things don't still exist today, but there's just more in this gig economy. There's more side hustles, more opportunities, more ways to supplement your income or kickstart your entrepreneurial mindset and make ends meet.
It sounds a little old fashioned, but it's like, I think the internet gave us this ability to understand that there's a lot of different ways to run a business. I mean, you can run a business just as yourself. You can actually form a business and do some of the work, you know, in your extra time. A lot of times, you know, if you work in a hospital, if you have more of a shift type of a job, maybe you're not working the traditional 9 to 5 and you're able to get some work done in odd hours of the day. But maybe we'll just jump in and talk about our side hustles. I mean, it's kind of funny to think all of the consultants within Student Loan Planner have sort of another primary job. So you could almost think of what we do here with Student Loan Planner with our consulting work as a side hustle, you know, in a way. I mean, it's something that takes maybe a little more time than your average side hustle, but it's something that we're all passionate about and chose to do because we really want to help people. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I'd say that it's definitely verging on the side of main hustle because it does take a commitment of time, but it's something that I think we all really enjoy. And there's a team behind the scenes that a lot of our listeners never find out about or never hear about. We did have Brittany come on in a recent episode that we recorded, but for all of us, I'd say it's great because we're all motivated. We're all pulling our weight, so to speak, in what we produce.
Absolutely. So we can go really deep into our history of side hustles. I think mine might be a little shorter than yours, so I'll just dive right in. When I actually got out of undergrad, I went and worked for an event planning company. So I didn't go right into the financial world at all. I worked for a sort of charitable and big wedding type of event company. And one of the wedding planners we were close to just noticed my handwriting and thought, hey, do you think you'd ever be interested in calligraphy? Or do you think you could ever flourish your handwriting a little bit? Because I think I could use you a lot for invitations. And I thought, I mean, yeah, it's my handwriting. I think I can figure that out. So this would have been in 07, 08, right before the giant market crash. But I fortunately was not too deep into financial planning at all. But anyway, I started turning up my writing and realized you can get paid quite a bit of money to do calligraphy for invitations for weddings and things, because weddings can be so expensive that paying a little bit for invitations is sort of a drop in the bucket. So I've actually been doing calligraphy, those decorated sugar cookies that you can go down a rabbit hole on Instagram with. So sort of a creative business. I know that that's something that my brain needs in order to escape every now and again. And so it's really been, it was a hobby for a long time. And then when I was working for my prior firm, the financial planning firm out of business school, since in 2013 to 2019, before I went out on my own, I really needed the creative outlet. It was a very stressful job, you know, just really high level clients that had really more needs, I think, than your average client did. And I just needed an escape. And so I was able to spend a lot more time doing that calligraphy, doing those sugar cookies. And my sister is here. Both of our maiden names, it's Frost is my maiden name. And so we started Frost Sisters Creative in February of 2019. We actually formalized it into an LLC, which we'll touch on a little bit later of like, how do you actually want to present yourself as a side gig? Do you want to be an official business or more just a sole proprietor? And interestingly enough, I think the formal route maybe wasn't the best choice. So again, we'll talk about that later, but it's something that she and I still get to spend time together doing, and I really enjoy it. So other than student loan planner, you know, I also spend time doing a lot of creative stuff on the side.
Question for you, Molly, on that. So, and from my side of things, I wouldn't say I really formalized anything until also later. How did that feel from 07, 08 to 19 in terms of, were you ever concerned about something going wrong and someone getting upset because of what the cookies looked like or not getting delivered on time or how they tasted?
It's really interesting that the more you know about business and the legal side of things, the more nervous you can get in terms of what am I exposed to here? I decided to run my business as a sole proprietorship up until very recently because I figured with calligraphy, if I needed to redo some of the invitations, I would be happy to do that. I feel like it would be very rare that a client would sue you for, you know, not having the right handwriting, but that was a risk. I mean, it was definitely a risk because I guess we can just dive into this now, the idea of how you form your side gig. You know, if you're a sole proprietor, you're operating under your own social security number. And if somebody doesn't like you, then you're exposed, you know, other than things like your home and your retirement accounts, any savings you have could potentially be open for the taking should you get sued. So again, within that, it was much more calligraphy at the beginning. I didn't move into the cookie stuff until later, but that was actually part of the decision of why we did the LLC, because home baking has different rules in every state. In Texas in particular, it just, you know, you have to put a lot of disclosures on the cookies of where they're baked and everything. And that's enough protection. But I just didn't know, you know, if anybody got sick, I don't know what I would do. It's just that's sort of the one terrifying thing about running a creative business. But with calligraphy, you're pretty safe.
That's awesome. I would say that I ran the risk as a sole proprietor for a while, early on even. I remember I wanted to go to a swim meet at USC in California. And I grew up in Oregon swimming. I was 11 years old. I asked my dad if I could go to the swim meet. And he said, yeah, if you can pay for it. So my godfather had a pressure washer. And I had an idea that I remember spending a long day raking leaves. And I made $5 for probably 3/4 acre of leaves. And thinking that, man, I just need to, that's not going to pay for a swim meet. So my godfather had a pressure washer. I asked him if I could borrow it or pay him for it. And I ended up over the course of a year with my brother, we went around in the neighborhood. We asked people if we could pressure wash their driveways. I did practice doing it on our own driveway, messed up a few times, and it was great. And it paid for the next 3 years of swim meets. I paid my godfather. I bought the pressure washer from him. I bought add-ons for it. It was an awesome side gig until I ran into the neighborhood pressure washing business.
Oh, no.
I flew under the radar for about 3 years, and then it ended pretty quickly. I wouldn't, I guess, categorize or define the work that I did back then as necessarily a side gig. It was just a way to make money. It was me thinking outside the box. Have always been that way. I worked side jobs in college and after college when I couldn't find a full-time role right after college. For me, it was definitely a hit to my ego, for sure, because I thought I studied a difficult major. I was successful in a lot of places in my life, but I couldn't, for whatever reason, 90 full-time applications later, find a job.
Wow.
So I just leaned back on the only thing I knew how to do, which was trade time for hourly work. And that turned into 4 different jobs for about 3.5-4 months after college. And I did find a full-time job eventually. But in the meantime, I did what I knew how to do, which was meet people, talk to people, and work hard.
I think that's something that's really relatable to, you know, we're going to get into some of the numbers of what happened during the pandemic. But I mean, I think that just shows your entrepreneurial spirit and your willingness to figure it out, even if your life didn't look the plain vanilla way you thought it would look after you graduated from college. I think that's really interesting and very relatable to probably what people are going through today as the economy opens back up. So it looks like maybe, or you've told me that you've done some side gigging during the pandemic as well.
Yeah. So the pandemic for me, it was a time period to hit the reset button and just think about, because I had all this time at home, what I could do. And I made some New Year's resolutions at the beginning of 2020. And I remember thinking semi-seriously, if I had time, that I would try to learn something new each quarter. One of those things was I had been talking with a friend who had recently changed to creating a property management company. He had been in commercial real estate. He had then tried to start a fund and had been semi-successful raising money. And he realized that he wanted to be more the middleman between the landlord and the resident of a property, the tenant of a property. So I put in my resolutions that I was going to spend one quarter learning that, and I would reach out to him sometime later in the year. And then the pandemic happened and I had all this time at home, and I thought maybe I should just use some of my time outside of Netflix to learn something new. So I reached out to him and we struck up a deal. I would give him feedback. I would look at his money coming in, money going out, and he would teach me how to be a property manager. And we started with a weekly call. And that weekly call still exists today. We do two weekly calls, or I guess we do a Monday call and we do a Thursday call. We formalized the arrangement this year. We have a contract. I get a flat percentage of his gross revenue. And when he started in May, he had two landlords, eight doors. And now we've got just over 40 landlords and 128 doors. So having that kind of growth wasn't always like a bunch of fun. We went from roughly eight doors to 128 doors. But in that time period, there were growing pains. And most recently, we had our weekly call and my college friend on Zoom sharing the screen showed me a stack of paperwork that he got at lunch from a professional tenant. If you've never heard of a professional tenant, here's what they are. They will go into a property, they will never pay rent, and they will damage the property when they leave. And they will then turn around and sue everybody, landlord, property manager, the judge, anyone and everyone involved.
Wow. So let me break this up real quick and just ask you the question, because in my financial planning practice, you know, real estate is brought up as, it's almost like there's two things. There's investing in the market and then there's real estate. And we can kind of group side hustle into this because a lot of people want to do real estate in addition to their job. So kind of what you're doing, let me ask you just hopefully a layup question. Is real estate a super easy way to make a bunch of money?
If you're on the commission side of it, it can be. If you have either a well-connected network or you do a really good job at marketing yourself to other people who are, they're either making impulse purchases, mainly based off of first impressions or something along those lines, then yes, it can be a way to make a lot of money really quickly. You know, property management isn't in that side of the business. It's very similar to maybe a financial planner that charges a percentage of assets under management. We charge a percentage of revenues received. And there isn't really a commissioned aspect to it, other than perhaps lease ups. When someone renews their lease or adds a new tenant comes in, then there's a commission of maybe 1 month's rent for that or half a month's rent for that. I don't participate on that side of our revenues. I just participate in the, when rent is paid, we charge a flat percentage. And of that percentage, I get a percentage.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I think that real estate is a way to build wealth. The way you're doing it is very, very different than I think what most people think of. They think of buying a few properties and managing them, but who manages them? That's a lot of the feedback I give. And maybe somebody like your company would be the person that you bring in and they help manage the property so that basically if you have a full-time job, you can't go driving around and working on different properties because you're busy in 9 to 5. So is that where someone like y'all would come in?
Yeah. We'd come in. I'd say that our industry probably, at least from our side, deserves to be broken down a little further. As a property manager, I would put my college friend's company as a property management company that delivers a very simple report every month. The report doesn't include things that other property management companies might typically include for their fee. We are just focused on how much came in, what the expenses were, tracking all the receipts for those expenses, coordinating with those vendors, plumbers, electricians, pest control, coordinating on-site of those things that happen throughout the month, and then delivering a report that says, this is how much you made. Other property managers will provide a lot of other information about the property and do so on a 24-hour basis. Like something comes in and it shows up and is available to the landlord very quickly. And we don't do that. And the reason why we don't do that is it's so that we can undercut the market. So we're probably sitting at half to less than half of what the market normally charges for property management. And that's just, we have a very simple delivery of what landlords get. And then we have the same delivery that most residents get. They can pay their rent online. They can put maintenance requests in online. We just took a technology approach to an industry that is way behind, I guess.
Wow. Okay. So we've gone down a little bit of a real estate rabbit hole, but I think the big takeaway for me is you can choose a side hustle because it's just something that you're really passionate about, or you can choose a side hustle because maybe you've got a connection with a buddy that is something that is not too much extra work for you, but delivers a return for you. I mean, there are so many definitions of a side hustle. It doesn't have to be, to me, the word hustle even indicates that like, this is something you want to do. You want to hustle for to make that extra money. But what does all of this have to do with student loans? You know, like, what is this? Why is this a topic for our podcast? And I'll go ahead and start there. You know, if you're on an income-driven repayment plan, well, either way, you've got to document your income from your side hustle. So, you know, even if it's a hobby, you're technically supposed to document that income with the IRS. And so if you're showing extra income on your tax return and you're on an income-driven repayment plan, then your payments would go up, you know, unless you're able to generate losses within your side hustle, which I don't know that you'd want to do the side hustle if it generated a loss every year. I mean, maybe for tax benefits, but Dan, I don't know if you want to expand on that a little bit.
Yeah. So if you're on an income-driven plan or you're on a paid down zero plan, in both cases, extra money is extra money. After you pay your taxes and then you pay your, Travis has described in the past as a 7 to 12% income tax on your income-driven repayment amount, or you're on a paid down zero plan where you're taking every dollar after taxes and putting it towards your student loans, it's a good problem to have. So side hustle income it's huge. It can be good on the money side. It deserves to be balanced if you have other things that are in your life that matter more or that should be prioritized more, then that's important too.
Let me repeat that. I think it bears repeating. We talk about this a lot in our consults where people think an income-driven repayment plan, for one, I don't think a lot of people who get onto our consult calls at the very beginning know that an income-driven repayment plan can drastically reduce your payment. You know, there's kind of a misconception out there that, and obviously we've talked about this so much, but that it might reduce it a little, but not in a huge way. So back to what you were saying, Dan, and what Travis has talked about, all of the consultants have talked about, is that you can think of your income-driven repayment plan as a tax. So, you know, 7 to 12%. Sometimes we see it where it's 3 to 4%. It just depends on your unique situation. And if you think mentally of your income-driven repayment plan as a tax for a certain number of years, you know, eventually your tax will no longer be there. Well, in this case, because you won't have that income-driven repayment plan anymore. Yeah, I just wanted to repeat that as far as we're not saying an extra income tax for having a side hustle, but remember that basically any side hustle income that you have will add to your income-driven payment. But I mean, there's other things that you can do to mitigate that we'll talk about in a little while. I overpaid my loans. I've talked about this a couple times. I paid the standard 10-year amount, which was $1,400 a month for the first year. And then I paid $1,500 a month the next year, $1,600 a month the year after that. And then every bonus I got, I threw towards my loans. So it was this weird stair step aggressive approach that I did. You know, side hustle money, absolutely could have all gone toward that because I wasn't worried about keeping my payment low. I was worried about being super aggressive with my payments and being done as soon as possible. I paid mine off in 6 years because I didn't know any better. Essentially, that's a story for another day. Yeah, for the pay it all down to zero, or if you've refinanced, for example, and want to overpay, then, you know, if you generate $10,000 to $20,000 extra dollars from a side hustle, just pretend that money's not yours and throw it towards the loans. And then you get to enjoy it once your loans are gone. So that's the other side that you were already talking about, Dan.
Whether it doesn't matter whether you're on a paid time zero plan or an income driven plan, if you side hustle, that's extra money in your pocket.
Right.
If you're on an income driven plan and you decide to start telehealth and you're worried that that extra income is going to increase your student loan payment, well, it is, but you still have roughly 60% of that dollar that can be allocated towards other things that are important to you. Either way, it's a good thing.
Yeah. And this is a little bit of mental accounting, which is to say that you think of different pockets of money and in different roles in your life, which you can be useful or not. But I mean, a side hustle, you could also just think of that as your fun money. So if between your student loan payment and between your mortgage or your rent and everything else, money feels pretty tight, then that side hustle can provide a, now we have money for vacation this year, or now we have more money to throw towards our hobby this year, because a side hustle in general is something you enjoy doing. So the money from that can benefit you, you know, in ways that maybe your 9-to-5 salary can't, because it's just too tight while you're making student loan payments and everything else.
Yeah. Speaking of 9-to-5, I was looking at some numbers last year, over the past year, and from March to May of just 2020, there was over 20 million 9-to-5 jobs lost. Supposedly,
wow.
The 3.5% unemployment rate pre-pandemic went to almost 15%, which is just staggering when you think about the number of people. And if you dive further into those numbers, it gets worse, because these unemployment rates, the unemployment rate, that's an average. If you dive into that, you look at the types of jobs that were lost, and you look at the average incomes of folks who lost those jobs. Of the jobs that exist out there, 30% of them are for low-income families. And of the jobs that were lost last year, 54% of them were from that group.
And you know what's interesting about that is, I don't have any stats right in front of me, but generally speaking, people don't have a lot of savings. You know, I think the average is in the $400 or so dollar range. And so none of us knew the pandemic was going to be what it was. I mean, I remember some of the things that I said at the beginning, thinking this is probably a flu, it's not going to be that serious. But I mean, if you have $400 of savings and a family of five, and you suddenly both parents lose their jobs, I mean, it was a really crazy time there for a while.
For sure. And it hasn't recovered as much as the numbers might look on the front end. I mean, our unemployment rate is back down to 5.8% as of the end of last month. So it seems like it's recovered. I mean, because that's only over 2% away from what it used to be. But if you look into lower income jobs that were lost and how they haven't recovered there, I mean, they're at 8% away instead of 2% away. So talk about like the travel industry. We're talking about the entertainment industry, the food service industry as well. And the food service industry has pivoted, has recovered somewhat. That's different. And I think that actually is a good descriptor of our side hustle economy, the gig economy coming out.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. You listed the travel industry, the entertainment industry, food service, things like that. I mean, I don't know. I was looking at flights recently for the 4th of July, just thinking, I wonder if everything's still really cheap. It's not. Things are coming back, which is great. And hopefully we'll get, you know, a better or a lower unemployment rate there pretty quick, because I just think the demand is so huge. You look at any pictures of the Florida beaches right now, and you know, it seems that's where all my friends are at the moment. And so I think those that were hit the worst, we're all just going to, this summer at least, and then past that, or I mean, everybody's ready to book vacations. I'm already ready to go to Colorado twice this year. And I was one of the squares that really stayed inside, you know, and didn't want to get out there even with masks. I was nervous. And so I think that's what everybody's feeling. And hopefully that's a really good thing for the job industry or the side gig industry.
Yeah, I hope so. The adversity that we experienced has brought about this explosion in different kinds of jobs. People sitting at home with more time on their hands have realized that maybe what they have in their living room isn't as valuable to them, because they see it now every day.
Yeah.
And so they decided to go on Facebook Marketplace and sell that. And then someone else is buying that. And that's, I guess, an exchange of goods, but that's income producing in a way that probably is perhaps even mentally a good thing to get rid of something that isn't as valuable to you or doesn't make you as happy. And in turn, you get some money for it.
Yeah. I mean, before the pandemic, I never would have ordered. I mean, I think I ordered Uber Eats and things like that a couple of times, but you know, another thing that exploded was things like DoorDash. And I've actually moved north of Dallas where I'm originally from, and Uber Eats didn't come out here to the country for a while. And so DoorDash did. And I am a financial planner. I am somebody that's really interested in student loans. I'm very conscious of dollars in and out, right? And DoorDash was so painful in terms of the fees and the tip and everything else that you add on to your $20 order. It basically doubles the price of your food order. But I mean, that was something in the pandemic that it was worth it to me, not being exposed to a bunch of people I didn't know, and I didn't know where they'd been and things like that. And so it's funny how, you know, the side gig or the gig economy really did adjust things like restaurants and grocery stores. I mean, restaurants basically shut down, and a lot actually did during the 12 months or so that we were on lockdown, but food delivery exploded. I'm a perfect example of that. Every time I would, I was really upset about it, but I still did it. I still paid for it. So things like out here, a lot of ladies got out their old sewing machines and put masks together, and we paid a lot of money for those because we knew we were supporting our neighbors, and turns out they weren't the most comfortable necessarily, but you know, things like that. I mean, I can't tell you how many friends on, as you're scrolling through Instagram or Facebook, all of a sudden were selling masks, and you know, you want to support your friends. So I don't know. There's a bunch of others. Anything you can think of?
I could definitely identify with the grocery store deliveries in terms of my family, my relatives, especially older people in my family who looked at that extra cost of grocery delivery fees and thought, this is totally worth it. This is totally worth not having to go even during senior hour and go into the store and be exposed to a real risk. Yeah, grocery store deliveries. In my mind, it exploded because it seemed like everybody I was talking to was using it in some way or form. I think that teaching online is something that people realized they could do. Maybe they were a teacher in school and all of a sudden they were fully remote or hybrid and they had to get used to, they had to learn how to use virtual teaching tools. They realized they were good at that. They picked up a new skill and started doing that remotely because it just broadened their horizon.
I took a few cooking classes online from different people and I thought it was really fun. I mean, I love to go to physical cooking classes before the pandemic, but it was still really fun to do it on Zoom for sure.
I started doing virtual workout classes. My club at the time, they've since closed down, but they started virtual workout classes and it was novel at first and then it just became part of my day and it was great.
Yeah. Okay. So if somebody is listening today and they have never really thought of doing a side hustle, but maybe, you know, they're still able to work from home and are tired of watching Netflix for 4 to 6 hours on every evening, how do you know if a side hustle is right for you? For me, it's a combination of factors. I had a feeling in my gut that my 9 to 5 was not enough. I needed a more of a challenge. And when I say 9 to 5, I had worked in, you know, the event planning world. I worked at an art gallery for a while. I worked in 2 different financial planning jobs. So I've had a lot of different 9 to 5s. I'm not a go all the way through medical school and be a doctor for life person. I've skipped around a bit. But no matter what, I always felt like I needed another outlet outside of my 9 to 5. So I knew it. I felt it kind of in my bones, if you will. And, you know, another piece of that, I feel like it was really good for my mental health to have that side hustle, to have that escape after work, just something to keep me busy that I was passionate about. I don't know. How do you feel about it, Dan?
I've never had a safety net. Financially, it's never been there for me. It was never there from the start. And so I used side hustle income to pay for things that I wanted. It didn't teach me much about how to save for things that I wanted in the future, but I knew how to pay for things that I wanted right now. More recently, the side hustle, it's evolved. For me, it was just learning last year because I had time, but then it turned into, well, maybe this could actually pay for some bills when I leave my full-time job and I have no income. So the side hustle has changed for me from, it's still paying for, I guess, basic necessities. It's paying for things that need to be paid for, but it's helping prop up my financial planning practice, which a lot of financial planners who go on their own are coached to expect to not have a profit for a while.
Yep, been there.
So the side hustle has morphed over time in terms of what it means to me, but it still has always been this safety net.
Yeah, I think the cautionary tale about a side hustle, and since we both have experience with it, we can probably speak more to this, is time is a really valuable resource. So when I referenced earlier, you know, watching 4 to 6 hours of Netflix a night, maybe spending a day on the couch on Saturday or Sunday, if that's the time that you have with your significant other or with your animals or with your family, where y'all all sit together and you visit while you're watching TV, then don't think you have to go out to the garage and start a woodworking business just because we're talking about a side hustle, right? Like it's something that if you really feel like you want to be more productive with your time, and it won't take away from your time with your loved ones. Because obviously, I mean, it's funny, while we're doing our student loan consults, a lot of people ask about public service loan forgiveness and about longer term forgiveness. And, you know, maybe working in a job they don't love as much because of the public service loan forgiveness 10-year forgiveness option. And we always try to push people toward happiness over the right financial decision. You know, not to say that we want you to do the wrong financial decision, but don't stay in a job that you don't like just to get public service loan forgiveness. Don't start a side hustle just because you think extra money might be good. I think that, you know, you don't want to take away from any family time or other things that are important to you. Would you agree?
Yes, I would absolutely agree with that. It's important to not overbalance yourself. Keep yourself in check when it comes to starting something new, because it's an investment of time. And when it's an investment of time, that's something you can't get back. It's a resource that's not renewable. And if there are other people in your life that really matter to you, or other dependents that would really appreciate your time, and that's more important, you have to pick what's right for you.
Absolutely. So, you know, any further thoughts on anything we've already talked about? We've got some cool nerdy tax stuff that we can dive into about a side hustle, but any other, you know, overarching thoughts we haven't gotten to yet, Dan?
No, Molly, I think we should just go into taxes or a few things, some legal and tax stuff. And I'll preface this with, we're not attorneys. We are not accountants. Disclosure, disclosure, disclosure. This is just from our perspective as business owners.
Sounds great. So when I was a sole proprietor, when I had my calligraphy business for all the years I did before I officially made it an LLC, which there's even some complication there. What happens when I make extra income and I'm working for myself in this scenario, it actually flows on your tax return to your Schedule C. So you're able to calculate all of the income and then expense several things without forming a formal business structure. So again, you're working under your Social Security number. It flows on your tax return. And interestingly enough, if you are a single member LLC, so if you start your own business but do make it a formal limited liability company, that will also flow onto your Schedule C, which again, it's just an addition to your typical 1040 tax form.
Right. It's an addition to it. My financial planning practice is a sole member LLC.
So is mine.
Yeah. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine what I should do, and I described the sources of income that I have. He just recommended that I separate them. So I have one LLC that has negative income every month, and I have another LLC for a student loan planner and this property management revenue. And that's positive every month. There are no expenses for it, but it's a separate LLC and it's a sole member LLC. So either way, they both show up on my personal income tax return.
Yeah. And the, you know, the other thing that you can do, so I'm a sole member LLC. I used my Schedule C for the first couple of years, but because I'm finally making some money, so Dan, there's hope, on the financial planning side, I just hit my 2-year mark. And so I decided to convert to an S corp, which I'm still, as far as ownership of the business, sole member LLC, but I'm taxed as an S corp. And what that means is that I can pay myself a salary, start your generic withholding, you know, the normal thing that a lot of us do for our paychecks, and then have a portion of the profit paid out as well. So it's a little bit more complicated, but it's basically once you get to a certain level of profitability, it gets to be worth it. You save some money on it from a tax perspective, but easiest way to start a side hustle is either to be a sole proprietor or a single member LLC from a tax perspective. At least that's my view on it. Again, I'm not a tax expert, so there might be many more ways, but I think it's the most plain vanilla thing that you can do.
And I'd say it's probably just important to rely on the professionals who are helping you create your legal documents, who are helping you file your tax returns, to advise you on how much to pay yourself if you're organized as an S-Corp. It will save you payroll taxes with your profit distributions above what you're paying yourself through your S-Corp, but you have to pick how much to pay yourself.
Yeah. And another thought on the tax structure here is that the partnership that I have with my sister, it is a dual member or a two member LLC. And what happens from a tax perspective there just makes me want to puke. It is a taxed as a partnership. And so it spits out something called a K-1. If any TurboTax users are out there, it's a completely different TurboTax software. It's significantly more complicated. If you use a tax professional, it's way more expensive to prepare K-1. So if you have a friend that you want to start a side hustle with, honestly, it would be easier to try something like what we've talked about, a single member LLC, and then pay your partner or your best friend as a contractor. So anyway, it can get complicated when there's more than one of you. Generally speaking, a single owner has a lot more flexibility and the tax prep will be less expensive. Just a thought.
That's actually a perfect description of how I'm paid through property management. My friend is an S-Corp and he's a sole member. He owns the company and he has hired me, my LLC, as a contractor. We're totally separate. I'm not his employee, and you know, outside of gross negligence with work, I'm indemnified from something happening to him. So in the case of him getting served, that's something between him and the previous landlord, not between him, the previous landlord, and me.
Well, that's good to have that layer of protection. Yeah, that's what we've learned is we're sisters. We are 50-50 in the business. So we thought partnership is the right way to go, but it's caused a few more headaches than were probably necessary, you know, in terms of just business structure. I mean, because you can still be sort of 50-50 in a business without officially owning it that way. You just have to make sure you trust your partner, whoever you're working with. You want to make sure that you trust each other big time.
Here's something that you could do. If you're listening to this and you're like, Dan, Molly, my situation's not that complicated. I'm W-2 9-to-5. I just want to pick up something extra. But that something extra is not W-2. They're not withholding payroll taxes. They're not withholding taxes before they pay you like Uber might do. If that's the case, if you have extra income that's coming in and it's very simple and you think the risk of something bad happening is pretty low and it's just you're creating a product, someone's purchasing it, you're getting paid for it, you could increase your withholding from your day job. You could update your W-4 just like you might when you get married or you have an extra dependent in the family. You might update your W-4 to withhold less or withhold more. And that's a form that you could update at any point in the year. And it tells your employer that you work for full time to adjust how much to withhold from your paychecks.
Yeah. And if you already work with a CPA, you could also consider. So most of what we do, you know, in terms of when you work with a CPA, you get your taxes prepared. CPAs, EAs can also do tax projections for you. So if you think or you have a pretty good idea that maybe you'll make $20,000 from your side hustle, other than what Dan was just talking about of extra withholding, you could also do estimated quarterly payments. At least hold that aside. If you're not sure what your income is going to be, you know, make sure and hold some aside, maybe in a savings account and be ready for some tax payments. If you can't basically withhold enough on your W-2 or that seems too complicated, you can always get a tax projection from a tax expert as well.
And if you are in this, you know, you're past the pay it down strategy, you pay down your student loans, or you're on an income driven plan and you're looking for places to put this cash, if it doesn't go into an expanded lifestyle and cooler vacations, and instead you want it to go into like, you know, a retirement account, you can set up a retirement account for your side hustle income. There are a number of different types of accounts. We won't go into that in this pod, but you know, it's good to talk to a financial planner, do some Googling, go down a Reddit thread, talk to an accountant, just so you can understand what kinds of accounts are available to you and how they can reduce your income taxes from your side hustle income.
Yeah. And I think one more thought on that is a lot of times we're on calls where maybe one spouse doesn't work and the other spouse does. And maybe we're able to do some creative things with you, like married file separate in a community property state and split your income. Well, what if that stay-at-home spouse now decides that they want to have some sort of a side hustle and they've never had a job before. So we're going to be adding income. I think that's a really good time to potentially schedule a follow-up. Maybe again, Dan and I have this experience. In the first year or two, you're probably not looking at a huge profit because you're going to need to buy, you know, materials or some education in order to be ready to launch your side hustle, maybe pay for a website, things like that. But once you start making some money, it might sort of change your picture that maybe we've recommended on a consult. And so it's probably a really good time to think about a follow-up.
Absolutely.
Okay. So I think we've covered pretty much everything as far as side hustles go. Not every kind of side hustle, because there's a lot of good people out there that have talents that Dan and I don't have. So, you know, we encourage you to look into it. There's a whole lot of inspirational content out there on the internet if you're interested in a side hustle. But I think that the most important thing to remember is that a side hustle should be fun. Hopefully it's not a bunch of extra work that you're throwing on yourself. And there's always things we can do from an income perspective, whether it be save for retirement, save for an HSA, figure out what we need to expense on our side hustle to try to keep it in line with whatever our student loan repayment strategy is. So absolutely reach out to us if you have any questions about your side hustle or what that might do to your income-driven repayment plan. But other than that, thanks for listening.